Well, howdy friends. It's me, Jenna, your often haplessly haphazard host here. I'm very glad you've joined me this week, because I have three things to share, and a couple of fiddly bits, and a doodle mufflodger as well. I hope you enjoy this week's collection. So thing number one for today is to do with plastic. It seemed such a great idea when it first made the scene decades ago. The time is told, and the tale is not a pretty one. Plastic never goes away. It's going to be on Earth forever now. It does not biodegrade, and there is a fuck ton of it. And it is everywhere. It is in our tap water and lakes and ponds and oceans. It's in our homes, and it's in our bodies. It's present in the entire food chain, and anything that eats ingests plastics. In 1950, humans made 2.1 million tons of plastic, and by 2015, still some years ago, that number was a staggering 406 million tons. More than 100,000 marine animals and over a million seabirds die every year because of chemical and oil waste and plastics dumped into the marine environment. While some of these pollutants can and do degrade in just a few months, many other pollutants can take hundreds and hundreds of years. Now, even in the remotest reaches of the planet, natural areas can have pollution levels as high as those in a large city. Environmental organizations and governments around the world have supposedly begun to act to put a stop to the global threat of plastic and the new darling term microplastics, but the targets set seem kind of unattainable, and we need more urgent action to clean up existing and stop further plastics pollution. Everyone can do something though, even if it seems a little thing, to respect our Earth and innovate for the now and for the future. We sort of have to do our best to fix stuff because this here little blue ball is it for now. Here's one thing we can pretty much all agree to do. We can make use of a gift from the planet. We can use hemp to make just about everything ever made of fossil fuel or hydrogen polymer plastics. Hemp plastic is easy to make and easy to compost, which only takes a few months compared to the fossil fuel-based plastics which remain forever unchanged. Hemp plastic is made of a mere 25 to 35% carbon compared to chemical plastics. If we humans had started the plastic craze with hemp bioplastics back in the 50s, we'd be a great deal better off, and so would the entire planet today. And hey, it's also an assload cheaper to make than fossil fuel, chemical, gross, smelly, bad plastics, like so much cheaper that it isn't even fair to compare. Hemp plastic products are also lighter, therefore cheaper to get from point A to point B, therefore having lower shipping costs and less fuel spent moving it. Hemp plastics are also stronger and last better. Just saying. Here's another best thing about hemp bioplastics. Hemp is easy to grow. One might say that it grows like a weed. Pun intended. Governments all around the globe are liberalizing and or legalizing the farming of hemp, so there's a great start to creating hemp biomass, enough to use on a wider industrial scale. Hemp can be used to make textiles, garments, paper and stationery, packaging and houses and furniture and clean tech and so much more. Oh, and also food. Hemp plastics can also sequester CO2, by the way. And once its usefulness has been fulfilled, it will biodegrade, not stick around forever. Already, there are many kinds of hemp plastics, from the sort that's standard plastic that's reinforced with hemp fiber, to 100% hemp plastic materials. The types currently available include hemp cellulose, cellulose nanocrystals, cellophane, rayon, celluloid, nanocellulose, and composite hemp plastics. Hemp plastics can be woven, formed, injection molded, pressed, blow molded, heat formed. Pretty much any way chemical plastics can be manufactured, so can hemp. And most manufacturing processes wouldn't even have to be changed much, if at all, to use hemp-based plastics. So this thing number one for today, is going to end with a thought for the future. The power of choice in what you buy speaks loudly, so buy what you believe in, and I hope that what you believe in is humans, and their many successes when our collective will is engaged, kind of like the Borg, but in a nicer way. I'm spreading hope here, guys, but it starts with all of us buying the right stuff and talking about it, like I tried to do with this thing number one for today. And now it's time for the to-do. That's so fun. The TDIH, this day in history. June 12th is the 163rd day of the year, so that means there are 202 days left. It was an awful June 12th in 1963 when United States American civil rights activist Medgar Evers was assassinated in Jackson, Mississippi by a piece of shit whose stupid name I won't repeat because it makes me ill. Back in 1817, the earliest bicycle was driven by one Carl von Drey. That bicycle was called a dandy horse. How cute is that? In 1939, Paramount Pictures started shooting the first horror film photographed in 3-strip Technicolor. Super fancy. That movie was Dr. Cyclops, and it's a good one. I like old movies. In 1897, Carl Elsner patented his penknife, which later became known as the Swiss Army knife. And I always have one on me, for real, right now, right here in my pocket, and everywhere else. I bristle with knives. It was on June 12th, 1964, that ANC leader and anti-apartheid activist Nelson Mandela was sentenced to life in prison for sabotage in South Africa. He came out on top, though, as he was released from prison after 27 years, and then went on to become the first black president of South Africa. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1993. If there were a smile prize, he'd win one of those as well, because that guy had a wonderful, genuine smile, didn't he? The United Nations proclaimed July 18th, Mandela's birthday, as Nelson Mandela International Day. To celebrate Mr. Mandela, the holiday is meant to honor the 67 years that Mandela spent working toward change by inspiring people to do something good on that day for 67 minutes. I don't think that's too big of an ask, do you? In 1979, Brian Allen won the second Kramer Prize for a flight powered only by a human across the English Channel. The historic flight was made in the Gossamer Albatross, a pedal-powered plane built mostly of clear mylar wrapped around a carbon fiber tubing frame. The flight across the channel, powered by this man's legs, mind you, lasted 2 hours and 49 minutes and covered the 22.5 miles or 36.2 kilometers between Folkestone, England and Cap Grenet, France. My legs are burning just thinking about it. 1806, John A. Roebling, German-American engineer, designed the Brooklyn Bridge. I could insert a joke about someone being gullible and me having a bridge in Brooklyn to sell them for a low, low price, but I shan't. In 1902, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on Chestnut Street, the first self-service restaurant, or automat, was opened by Horn and Hardart. I love those places, like in the movies. Never been to one. Be cool, though. In 1920, Man o' War, my favorite historical horse of all time, ran a mile and a half to win the Belmont Stakes in 2 minutes, 14 seconds, and just a little bit, by 20 lengths. That's super far. And super fast. And I still have the model of that horse from when I was a kid. and I love him. So in 1923, Harry Houdini hung himself 40 feet, or 12 meters, above the ground, upside down, in a straitjacket. But he freed himself, so that's cool. In 1931, gangster Al Capone was indicted on 5,000 counts of prohibition and perjury. Come on, man. Then, in the year 1980, President Ronald Reagan said he would let them do medical tests on him periodically because of his advanced age, and that he would resign from office should any untoward signs of senility or mental deterioration show up. He didn't end up having to do any mental acuity tests, as they were never necessary, but at the very least, knowing he was pretty fucking old already, he said he'd take action if it was needed. There are a few people I can think of in pretty high places right now who might do well to mimic Mr. Reagan right now. I'm just saying. In 2013, the world's oldest man, and oldest man in recorded history, Jiroemon Kimura, died of natural causes in Kyoto, Japan, at the age of 116 years and 54 days. Wow.
Hold it. Is that what you're having for breakfast?
Sure. Haven't you heard? Fiber is really good for you.
Well, there's fiber, and then there's high fiber. Try this.
Colon blow. Sounds delicious. But is it really higher in fiber than my oat bran cereal?
Take a guess. How many bowls of your oat bran cereal would it take to equal the fiber content of one bowl of colon blow?
Two.
Guess again.
Three.
A little higher.
Four.
Keep trying.
Five.
No, you'll have to do better than that.
Seven?
Guess again.
Eight?
We'll give you one more guess.
Nine.
Not even close. It would take over 30,000 bowls. To eat that much oat bran, you'd have to eat 10 bowls a day, every day, for 8.5 years.
Wow! I think I get the picture! Colon Blow must be the highest fiber cereal on the market!
Not anymore. Now that there's new Super Colon Blow.
Super Colon Blow?
It would take over 2.5 million bowls of your oat bran cereal to equal the fiber content of one bowl of Super Colon Blow.
I'm convinced.
Colon Blow and you in the morning.
Colon Blow and new Super Colon Blow.
Warning, may cause abdominal distension. Consult a physician.
So thing number two for today is a thing that kind of blows my mind. All my life, I've seen people use artificial sweeteners and been thoroughly confused by it. The fuck is wrong with just sugar? As long as one isn't eating buckets of it, it's really okay, isn't it? I mean, at least it is far better than a sugar replacement or artificial sweetener, whatever you want to call it. As a zero-calorie sweetener, sucralose, better known as Splenda, is 650 times sweeter than sugar or sucrose. It was marketed to give hope that obesity and its comorbidities might be lessened. For me personally, though, to begin with, when a load of this powdered sweetener has to be placarded on an 18-wheeler as explosive and hazardous material, that's a thing I pretty much don't think I want to put in my body. Second, it never tastes just like good old sugar. It just doesn't. Also, sugar doesn't rip holes in your DNA, even if you do eat bucket loads of it. Splenda or sucralose does, though. It can be metabolized in the gut to form a DNA-damaging compound called sucralose-6-acetate during digestion, which leads to all manner of horrible things like leaky guts, or damage to the junctions that hold together the cells that line the human intestines, causing the gut to become leaky. A leaky gut can allow molecules and microbes to go from the gut out into the body, which pretty much means that your feces leaks into places into you where you don't want it to be. This can cause all kinds of horrid things like sepsis or IBD, that's inflammatory bowel disease, and can even have a hand in chronic liver disease. It was found by researchers from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and North Carolina State University that the trace amounts of sucralose 6 acetate, I'm going to call it S6A from now on, in just one daily drink sweetened with sucralose exceeds the safe threshold per day per person as set by the European Food Safety Authority, and it doesn't even account for the S6A which can be produced during the metabolic process. Those researchers also found that gut cells exposed to S6A increased activity in the genes related to oxidative stress, carcinogenicity, and inflammation. Evidence is mounting that the use of S6A carries significant health risks. Studies in the past, since Canada first approved of S6A in 1991, have also linked its consumption to various health conditions, including obesity, which it's trying to avoid, diabetes, and leukemia. There are many alternatives that have been developed to help reduce intake of sugar, but the World Health Organization has issued new guidelines which advise against using artificial sweeteners to reduce the risk of non-communicable diseases and or control body weight, citing research suggesting that these products don't actually decrease body fat in either children or adults in the long term, and that using them might actually increase certain health risks like cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. Of course, the sweetener industry stands behind S6A, saying it's been super a lot tested, and S6A is tightly controlled by robust manufacturing processes, and it's only bad if you use too much of it and other blah blah blah. More though, people who use sugar substitutes, a lot of them that is, might actually eat fewer nutrient-dense foods like vegetables, nuts, fruits, and seeds. All things important for good mental and physical health. If you want to be overall more healthy, it's widely suggested that people use fake sweeteners in moderation, if at all. So if you just have to have a sweet fix, have a care now. Just because those things exist doesn't mean you can just sit and munch on artificially sweetened stuff all day because some asshole says it's okay. Don't do that. And don't be fooled by other artificial sweeteners either. Other ones like mannitol, xylitol, and erythritol can cause icky stuff as well, like higher risk of stroke and heart attack, and super a lot gas and bloating. If you just have to use not sugar, then at least look for a natural sugar substitute like stevia or monk fruit sweeteners. You can even grow your own stevia in your garden. It's just an herb, I'm just saying. For me though, because I'm half bee, as my mom used to say, I'm using honey and sugar, honest to goodness, real ass, delicious sugar. And I'm gonna use real salt and fuckloads of real butter too. If I'ma die from eating things, especially sweet things, I'ma die from sweet things that are from the earth, not the lab. Think about it. I am, even as I finish this thing number two for today, and go grab a hot cup of coffee with what I'm sure is way too much sugar, because as I've said before, I like it strong, hot, black, and sweet. So here's a little story about a man named Jed. No, actually, here's a little story about a woman named Jenna. On a sunny Southern California afternoon a long time ago, I got high for the first time with my friend from school and his big brother. We were sat beneath a giant eucalyptus tree in the corner of the field where we all played and rode our bikes. A place of fun, joy, play, contemplation, bird watching even when I was a kid. And on that sunny afternoon, it also became my forever remembery place. The doobie I first puff-puff passed was, according to Fred, Acapulco Gold. I don't know if it was or if it wasn't, I didn't care. Either way, I found happiness. If that makes me a hippie, so be it. A little late for a hippie, but there we are. All I know is that my mind, already a fairly creative bit of gray matter, expanded. I could see the galaxy and feel the leaves of the trees and hear the wheels of the cars miles away hit every rock and pit and crack, and the taste of that sweet weed on my tongue was just an epiphany. The whole world smelled of love, with a capital L. just, I loved it. Marijuana tickled and enticed ever since I have. I dare say I fell in love. Over the ensuing decades, there have been so many friends and family and fellow smokers, strangers who smelled my smoke or whose smoke I smelled, creating that instantaneous strange bond that happily happens when other smokers of the weed are near, or other acquaintances of the pot-wielding type. Among all of these great number of people, more than you might think actually, there has always been one constant, one thing that each and every one has said they wanted. Legal weed. Well, fellow babies, for this chick it finally happened. At long last, I was able to go to a store to buy weed. And I have a receipt to prove it. It still blows my mind. It was a couple years ago, but still cool. And I still have the receipt. I like the receipt. I like looking at it and reading it because it says 1 gram state flower, Madman OG. 1 gram state flower, Star Dog. And the free pre-roll they gave me as a first-time customer, insert big smiley face here, State Flower XJ13 pre-roll. I chose the XJ13 because of my Jaguar XJ6. My happily pot-stirred brain said that was karmic, and my happily pot-stirred brain agreed. The entire experience of going to a store to get a hookup was brilliant. And I've been able to do a lot of pretty cool stuff in my life, but this trip to the pot store, definitely in the top one. I'm not kidding. I love weed. I love the way it makes me feel. I love the way it eases the sharp edges of pain I feel every day, mostly because of the cool things I've done and got hurt doing. I love the way it allows me to eat, sometimes when even a taco doesn't make me want food. And that's bad, because I love tacos. I love marijuana for all its beauty and usefulness. I don't care if anybody else likes it or not. I've never seen a problem with someone smoking weed. I've never seen anyone go crazy on weed. I have, in fact, seen people who get super bitchy when they don't have or really want some weed. But I've seriously never seen anyone lose their shit because they were high. Weed just doesn't make people belligerent or mean or an asshole. Hungry, maybe. Lazy, yeah. Giggly, one hopes. But mean? Mm-mm. So now, having made myself clear on my feelings for the magically lovely budness, I would like very much to share the experience of going to a marijuana store with you. In the beginning, there was the choice, and the choices were vasty. I resided at the time in Las Vegas, Nevada, where there are now on this day a bunch of marijuana dispensaries, some near, some far, some fancy, some not. Being a good modern person, my search for the perfect dispensary for me began online. I read reviews, I perused websites, I slobbered over online menus, I compared prices, I freaking shopped for a place to shop for pot online, legally. Oh world, how crazy a place are you? Anyway, after much deliberation, I settled upon a place called the Apothecarium. Their site was orderly and informative. It had nice photos depicting smiling faces with a professional mien underlying the goofy grins. The menu made me happy. The prices were great. And the reviews were tip-top. And so I went. Upon leaving my Jeep and approaching the front of the store, I saw a clean and neat area with velvet-covered ropes surrounding a small table upon which sat a few neatly placed clipboards with the paperwork required when one entered a dispensary. As I neared this door, a kind-faced fellow stepped out to greet me, check my ID, and hand me one of those clipboards. It's a simple form that one fills out, and it has a few places to initial to prove that you understand that you can't just sit outside the store to smoke up and the like. After you fill out the form and have your ID verified, you have a seat in a friendly, open, comfortable sitting area, not unlike a fanciest doctor's office waiting room. On my visit, everyone waiting exchanged head nods and grins that were, yes, a little goofy, childlike one might say. We were all pretty happy to be there. After only a few moments of head nodding and grinning, my name was called by my own personal bud tender. I feel horrid that his name utterly escapes me, but I also instantly excuse myself because not only do I completely suck at names as a matter of course, I was also way too excited to remember a name at the time. Honestly, his name could have been Halrolo Prillilar for all I know. Once I had stood to join my bud tender, I'll call him Hal now, he greeted me kindly and happily. Upon his learning that I was a first-timer, he was especially sweet and even expressed excitement for me. Cleverly bantering, he led me to the counter, which thing was beautiful. It's a long counter, white, a kind of marble if I'm not mistaken. And there were stations along this counter, each with its own bright light on a bendable doohickey, so the light can be pointed where it's needed. Beneath this light was a menu bound in what I believed to be faux leather. It was amazing. I admit to being a bit flabbergasted, mostly because I love the word flabbergasted, also because it fits. I felt myself grinning like a complete idiot. You know what though? I had exactly no fucks to give as to what I might have looked like. I felt like a kid in a candy store, but times a gudge of a million. Hal opened the menu for me, pleasantly asking if I were interested in anything particular. Flour, dabs, shatter, pre-rolls, edibles? Well, my mind screamed, yes, to all of those. I had already decided I'd go for the best. Flour. I like smoking it. Not vaping or eating or drinking or filling a balloon or whatever. Smoking it. So I can see and smell and feel the pretty smoke. Hal turned to the menu page with the flowery lovelinesses, asking if I knew what sort of effect I desired. I told him, well, yes, sir, I'd like a euphoric change of mind with a bit of a body blessing. He got my meaning, immediately guiding my eye to the selections he had in mind for me. Here's the crazy part. The menu not only lists the THC and CBD contents, but also the terps and luols and leons and tigers and bayars and stuff. I'm glad I'm pretty smart because there is a lot to know about marijuana, especially if you're trying to decide from a selection the size of which I never thought I'd see in a store. This isn't bumping into your dealer at the Dairy Queen and choosing between ragweed and dro. This, as we used to say, is totally different head. And so I read the menu, trying to listen to good old Hal, and decided to decide. I honestly could have spent all day deciding. I didn't spend all day though. What I did do was name the couple of strains I had previously chosen to look more deeply into, and then Hal went to get the sampling jars. Brilliant little jars are these, say I. They're clear, so you can see the pretty flower buds from all angles. And the tops have two unique features. The first is a magnifying spot, so you can really get a good look at the colors and crystals and leaves and hairs and yumminess. The second feature is a longish area with a black cover. Once this cover is removed, there are two lines of holes through which one is able to take in the aroma of the flower bud inside. I was most pleased to both ogle and sniff the contents of these sampling jars. It's almost like tasting wine, and I mean that in the most literal sense. Once you've filled your olfactory with the sense of one strain, a small jar with a few coffee beans is presented to you for a quick snort, so as to cleanse the olfactory palate, readying for the next sniff. Come on now, that's outrageously sweet. I don't care where you're from. Having already done research on the strains I first wanted to purchase on my first trip to a pot store, which makes me smile every time I say it, my choice was solidified and I informed Hal of that fact. At this point, it gets really good here. He told me that as a first-time customer, I'd get a pre-rolled dupster for free. Mm-hmm. Free. free pot from a pot store. Does it get any better than that? Because I don't think it does. Hal showed me to the doobies on the fancy menu from which I could choose, and I did, opting again for the aforementioned XJ13. Sounds spacey. And it wasn't over yet. No, not at all. The lovely and talented Hal then proceeded to inform me of the points system, wherein one gets points for each purchase, gathers them all up, then gets a reward at a preset number of points, like at a grocery store. When one reaches this preset number of points, one gets a very special reward indeed. You get a huge percentage off of your next purchase. And I mean huge. I was impressed. Still not over though yet, boys and girls. The gregarious Hal then excused himself to go to the back room where they keep the Wheatleys, a place where I imagine has unicorns and Cheech and Chong and tacos flying through multicolored air, but that might just be me, to get me my flower. Upon his return, he presented me with the fanciest dang hermetically sealed pot pouches I've ever seen, one for each of the strains I'd purchased, and a cool little brightly colored plastic tube with the pre-rolled duber inside. And he still wasn't finished with me. He asked me to check the packaging, look over the prescription-type labels describing the previously spoken of terps and bears and lions and things, then put those, the receipt, and my purchased pot into one heck of a fancy shopping bag. It's a Ziploc-type bag, with a child-proof sliding lock, which is great, which he described the use of to me quite wonderfully. Once said bag was Ziploc'd, he handed it to me with a smile, thanked me for my business, asked me to come back again, to which I said, you betcha, like a big old dork, and I danced my happy ass out of there. Climbing into the Jeep in my parking lot, I was giddy, giddy, y'all. I had just shopped for weed in public, in the light of day, in Las Vegas, in America, on Earth. I felt like the future had come. I felt like a kid. I felt inordinately happy. I felt like hurrying home to catch a buzz. I felt like I should get my happy ass out of the parking lot so other happy, giddy people could also go inside my new heaven. Next stop was the freaking pot drive-through. It existed. I went. I'll tell you about it another time. Pot at a store.
Ladies and gentlemen, direct from the Tour of Londonderry, please welcome up to Paolo Santana's band.
Like they're grilling me, and I'm well done. I just can't stay cool. These hot days tire us, and now they say I've got a virus. Well, I guess that's the reason for the lesions on my toes. And they say my meat ain't good to eat. A jerky treat. I ain't good enough to serve as British food. It makes me moan. Red all over Europe, north and south. Me and all my friends have got the foot and mouth. You've got to find a cow that's never been around to find a young cow. Forget about me.
Whoa. they say I'll never be a meatball. And any plans I may have had for Jack in the Box, well, they're all out. So once I sick him, I'm gonna make out with a chicken. Yeah, it won't be just the cows, it's also the fowls. We're taking them down. And she is just my type, two breasts and legs. Say, why don't we run off and make some steak and eggs? You are as hot as a southern barbecue. We'll get foot and beak. I've got the foot and mouth and it has made me mad. So go get some fish or some eel and just forget about me.
It's time for the GWOD, the grandiloquent word of the day. But first, as to last week's F word, fjerk, I have a story. I recorded that segment and then went outside for a bit of air while sitting outside in my Jeep as I do, because it's a bit of a second office really, with a lovely and ever-changing view. I had opportunity to squinch Callie's side. So I did. In response, this motherfucker, who had no idea of a fjerk at all, much less in that episode, fjerked me. I explained the meaning of fjerk. We laughed. Callie went inside. I stayed in the Jeep, and a fucking fly landed on my phone mount, so I fjerked at it, and I hit the fucking thing. It was a glancing blow, but I hit it. Of course, that meant that I had to chop off my entire arm, because flies are just nasty. Still though, three fjerks in one day. Weird. So this day's GWOD begins with the letter G, and it's a good one. The word is girouettist, and it is spelled G-I-R-O-U-E-T-T-I-S-T. It is an English word, as borrowed from the French girouette, which means weather vane, as in something that changes as the wind blows. It means the practice of frequently altering one's opinions or principles to follow popular trends. Examples abound. Used in a sentence, the jealous, jaundiced, and jaded jackasses jointly jeopardizing generations with girouettist jargon are just jacked up. That was fun. I mean, I'm no girouettist myself. I have my own strong, sometimes idiotic, I'm sure, opinion. But at least I don't change it just to fit in. Shit, I don't fit anywhere. Do I fit with you guys? Let me know. You know how to do it. Well, from my farty-farty Jeep and her farty-farty noises, which were most of the guesses, to this reveal of the second mystery sound, this sound. This sound is the slowed-down sound of a hummingbird in flight. Some of the guesses I got were the sound of a car engine with a harmonic balancer out of whack. So technical, but it really does sound like that. I work on cars, I should know. I'm an expert. I'm not. I just work on cars. The sound of a belt squeaking in a small car. Also totes similar. A hamster wheel rolling, which I thought was a brilliant guess, but that wasn't it either. And a pump of the men's area type, which I suppose is a great guess, but I've not heard one, so. The next mystery sound will make its mysterious appearance on the next episode of Three Things on June 19th. To make guesses or share your own mystery sound with Three Things, that's me, you can email me, Jenna, at threethingspod@gmail.com. The number three, the word thingspod@gmail.com. Leave a comment on the app or platform on which you listen to this, and I hope a lot of other podcasts, because there are some great ones out there. Or leave me a comment on the homepage of the show. That's threethings.podomatic.com. The number three, the word things.podomatic.com. I love the mystery sounds. If you like it, let me know. If you hate it, keep your bullshit to yourself. No, I'm just kidding. If you hate it, let me know too, but don't hurt my feelings. I'm a delicate, delicate flower.
Distant star heading off to Iskandar, leaving all we love behind. Who knows what dangers we'll find? We must be strong and brave. Our home we've got to save. If we don't, in just 1 year, Mother Earth will disappear. Fighting with the Gamelons, we won't stop until we've won. Then we'll return, and when we arrive, Earth will survive with our star blazers.
And now for thing number three. So I have this dog, a beautiful little handsome toy Yorkshire Terrier, who we called Ganja. His name on his papers was Tribble Trouble, and yes, I'm a Trekkie and a Star Wars fan. You can be both, and I'll fight you for either one. Anyway, this little guy went everywhere with me in the van I drove at the time, and he would put his little nose on the window and leave snot. The snot was gross and interfered with my ability to see behind me. It was so bad. So I went to clean it, as one does, with window cleaner. And it just smooched and clung and wouldn't come off. So I tried lemon juice and ammonia and a baking soda solution and an actual nuke, all to no avail. That snot clung to the windows of that fucking van until I got rid of it. I still wonder what that dog had in his snot and if I could have invented a new glue or something. So I was telling someone about it the other day and I got to wondering about snot. Yeah, I just said that I wonder sometimes about snot. Here are some interesting things I found out about snot. There's a salamander in China who might be considered by some to be a bit of an uggo, but hey, it's the largest amphibian on the planet, so it's got that going on. Another thing it has going on is its snot. Kinda. It's not snot that comes out of its, I think, adorable nose. No, this snotty substance comes through their skin, and it makes a great wound-closing glue. Scientists extract the bioadhesive called SSAD by freeze-drying the raw mucus before they blend it with a solution of saline. The glue that results from that process might not be as durable as other methods of wound closure, like sutures and staples, but it really knocks those methods right out of the park with its other properties, like being non-allergenic and being really good at reducing inflammation, scarring, and infection, and by giving natural healing a boost. Also, it disappears after about 3 weeks all on its own, which means you don't have to go back to the doctor to get sutures or staples removed, and I'm totally down for that. You know when a snail goes sliding across the sidewalk and it looks so easy breezy as they make those slimy, slimy slime trails? It looks so easy, doesn't it? But it really isn't. They have to expend a great deal of energy to make that slippery slime, more than it takes to fly, walk, or swim, in fact. This can make life pretty hard for our slimy friends, especially when there's a food scarcity for them. You gotta be able to fill your snaily fuel tank, right? Well, it turns out the snails are a lot smarter than we thought. They know that they can conserve energy by using the slimy trail of another snail. And that's pretty smart. I guess it also means that when I go to the garden and see 6 or 7 slime highways, that there might be 12 or more snails than I thought, which is gross. I respect the snail and its apparent brain power more than I did before reading about this, but I still don't like them much. It's that crunch when you step on them. The bottom of the ocean, cold and dark though it be, teems with all kinds of life. But where does all that life go for supper? It doesn't look like there are enough cafes down there to serve everyone. Well, researchers looked for an answer to what they eat down there, and finally found at least part of the answer. And guess what? It's snot. Mostly. Sorta. So bizarre. So there exists a thing called sinkers. Sinkers are pretty much big floating balls of snot created by a giant larvation, which resembles a tadpole, called Bathocordius. They make snotty bubbles to protect themselves and also filter their food. What they can't use stays in the snot bubbles, which can measure a yard or more in diameter, and they sink, taking the food the Bathocordius can't use to the bottom. On the way down, the bubbles also collect more little creatures and bits of food, becoming basically food bombs from above for all the hungry things living below. Ain't Earth grand? And also pretty gross. Who doesn't love dolphins? I do. I know I freaking adore them. Their little smile, their fun personalities, their brains, those adorable little chirps they make. The chirps are, in fact and indeed, totes adorbs. But how are those sounds produced? They aren't created by vocal cords in the throat, but instead are made inside the nasal passages located right underneath the blowhole of the dolphin. There are lumps of tissue in there that smack together and vibrate up to 1,000 times per second to make those adorable chirps. We already know that part of it. What is interesting, though, is how high in tone those sounds are. To find out exactly how those super high squeaks are made, a computer simulation was done. And it turns out that the chirps need one more ingredient. That bumpin' ring, which is those vibrations of tissues, isn't enough to make the chirps we so love. And the simulation didn't produce the sweet chirps at all, until scientists added in a sizable amount of snot into the simulation parameters, and the sound came up. This suggests that without snot, dolphins wouldn't be able to communicate as effectively or echolocate or sound so fucking adorable. Well, that's enough of that shit. I mean, we've reached the end of this week's episode. I hope that I've said a thing you found interesting or educating or cool or summit. That's ever the goal. If you enjoyed this, or any episode of Three Things, like, share, and subscribe. It's free. It'd be cool, too, if you'd leave a comment, answer a poll, suggest a thing, or something. If you'd like to do that, just email me, jenna@threethingspod@gmail.com. That's the number 3, the word thingspod@gmail.com. Or leave a comment on your podcast listening app or platform, or on the current homepage of the show, threethings.podomatic.com. That's the number 3, the word things.podomatic.com. Buy me a cup of coffee, even. That'd be cool. Just visit ko-fi.com/threethings, number 3, word things. And you can do that. It helps me keep the show going and the community growing. And here is where I like to ask something of you, for you. It's all about you. I respectfully and caringly ask that you go look at yourself in a mirror or something and tell yourself that you fucking rock and that you deserve, for whatever it might be, to forgive yourself. So do that for you and for everyone and for me, and be happy. Good day, y'all.